give Pastor a minute here to get himself back together. We are looking through the ABCs of Christian maturity, and we are looking at the parents' duty to their children under the letter F, the family. Now, obviously, I'm sitting here and I'm speaking to a bunch of people who have raised their children and are pretty close to done with them, and they're getting into adulthood, or they're well past into adulthood. Some of you are not only parents, but your grandparents, and some of you have made it to that higher tier of great-grandparents. So I understand that, but hey, let's look at the whole counsel of God here in His house, shall we? Since we're going through the material. What is a parent's duty to their children? Psalm 127, verse 3 is where we'll get our start this morning. Psalm 127 and verse 3. And it says, "Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is His reward." We see very first of all in that passage that children are the Lord's heritage given to us, and it's our job to look at them from that perspective. Those children are not there for our own pride, for our own discretion. I think of a lot of people, they make that joke where, you know, especially if they came from a larger family, well, our parents had kids so that we could work on the farm. And when they needed more hands, they just made us. And I always kind of laughed at that, but again, that's not necessarily the purpose of children. They're there and they belong to the Lord, and we want to treat them that way. We want to be good stewards of the children in our lives. Proverbs 22, verse 6, we understand that passage. I believe we looked at that last week, that we are to train children. Now, that word has not, it's not had a lot of use in the last few years. Many of you, when you were coming up, your parents sat there with you and taught you how to do a lot of different things. And many of the same, you guys are sitting there teaching your kids, and then maybe you're teaching your grandkids certain things. But nowadays, that's not the experience that a lot of kids are getting from their parents. A lot of parents, they're getting their kids up, they're dropping them off at a daycare that takes them to school, and then around 6, 7 o'clock, they go to pick them up, they feed them dinner, and they fight with them for a little bit over the homework, if they care at all, and send them back. I've got a lot of friends, a lot of people I know who are teachers, and they bemoan the modern-day parent for how little effort they put into their child's education. They couldn't tell you what's going on with the schoolwork. Now, let's do this as a test. If you got in trouble at school, raise your hand if you were one of those ones who got whipped when, maybe not you necessarily, but if you misbehaved at school, you got whipped. Now, what about when you got home? Did you get a whipping then? Right? Yeah, that's what would happen. All right? There would be discipline. Nowadays, if I were to, at a particular point, if I were to get into trouble, the teacher would have to write out a very specific form that was endorsed by the school's lawyer to make sure that it was perfectly okay for them to send home. And at that particular point, many parents would show back up at the school and yell at the teacher for not doing a good enough job. And many teachers, they're getting out of the profession because parents hold them more accountable than they do their own children for their children's bad grades. We put the kids' report cards up on the refrigerator. And people asked, you know, my mom kind of looked incredulously at one of my kids' writing grades. How do they get a B minus in writing? And what you don't realize is that even though we homeschool, we don't get to do all the grading. We send those into the Abeka Academy, and they grade it. And you've got to be a calligrapher to pass. They literally talk about how on the pages that we're on how no parent has ever seen an A come back from them in the area of writing. And as much as we are proud of our kids, we hold standards to them. And what we do is when we get that report card in, we sit down with the kids and we have a conversation with them. All right, now this B minus, how did you get it? And we look at some of the paperwork, and Xander and Caspian can sit there and say, okay, well, that's not good. And that's not good. All right, so what do we've got to do? We got to work on the A's and the O's and the V. And we pick out letters that we got to work on. We put those into practice, and we do our best with that. There's a training that comes in. Xander and I, we're going to start reading the Bible together. I went out as his dad, and I got him not a kiddie Bible with pictures, but an adult Bible, one of those gift Bibles that you'd get. No study notes, just the words. And all right, so we're going to sit down, and this is what we're going to do. Now, why? Because that's part of training. I can't wait until he's a grown-up and say, well, son, how come you don't study the Word? If I, as his father, don't take this brand-new Christian and walk him through it. Not just from my perspective as his pastor, but as his father as well, I'm going to train certain things. When it comes down to getting up early in the morning, respecting their mother, what I show them is what they'll know. Same thing with Danielle. As she acts in the house is what they will know. So training gives us the aspect of discipline. How do I discipline my kids? How do I teach them discipline that they could grow up? And of course, Ephesians 6:4, fathers are responsible to bring their children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Well, that first part, nurture, that is where I am instructing them. I am feeding them in a very loving way. I've had to have this conversation because I don't know if you've noticed this, but my kids are just a little skittish. So sometimes I have to sit there and I speak differently to Caspian. And I'll sit there and I'll have to be loving. And I'll show him certain things. And I'll have to have this conversation with him. I'll go, okay, buddy, you are not in trouble. We are just talking. And he'll sit there and he still won't believe me. I have to say it two or three times. We're not in trouble. We're just talking. Yesterday we had a bunch of things going on and we were cleaning up. And Caspian wanted to come over. He wanted to wrestle with me. And I said, whoa, hold on. And I got them all together, and of course, they're sitting there, him and Gideon, just, no one's in trouble, we're just talking. And then Gideon relaxed, but Caspian's still sitting there waiting for it. I go, no one's in trouble. Right now is not a good time for this, right? So not in a corrective way, but nurturing comes in where I'm going to feed you some truth. This is how to do the finances. This is how to do the chores. This is the attitude in which we approach certain things. I'm not correcting you. I'm teaching you, I'm feeding you information to use to help you build your life. Because if I only ever sit there and discipline them when they do wrong, that's my fault. They did wrong because I never taught you how to do right. Now, of course, there comes that age when they get older, and as teenagers, they begin to reject what I have to say. And that's a completely different topic altogether. Nurturing happens in the beginning. I feed them. I teach them. I take them to church. We pray together. We're in the car together. I'm nurturing them. And of course, the admonition applies to teaching. I'm instructing you. We're sitting down. We're having these conversations. It's not just a matter of, well, we don't do that. And if you do it again, I'm going to spank you. There's time for that. But listen, we don't do that. This is why we don't do that, okay? Now repeat back to Daddy, why don't we do that? We don't do that because someone will get hurt, right? So we have those conversations. They're educational, they're instructional, and they happen outside of corrective times. Now, children require two different types of discipline, and they should be taught obedience from that perspective. And this will take real character on the part of the parents to keep consistent. Number one, children at the very early stages should be taught to obey without question and when necessary without waiting for an explanation. And the reason why is this: there are some moments where they're going to have to snap to it and just get certain things done. So if I were sitting there and I was looking outside and I saw Caspian had made it from outside the backyard and he's out in the front yard and he stepped out into the street. Not a very busy street, but it's a street. And I look out and I call and I say, Caspian, come here. He might be prompted to say, well, why? And he might be prompted to later sit there and look at me and say, but I'm just playing. And while we're having that conversation, again, there's people driving up and down the road and it's very nerve-wracking. No. Come here now. Now again, because I've parented that, or I've also buddied that up with, hey, listen, When we cross the street, we look left and right. Why? Cars. We don't play out in the front yard without mommy and daddy being there. Why? Cars. We have certain attitudes and certain things that we're teaching. But when daddy says, come here, that's it. We've had this conversation just recently as well. When I say, hey, Xander, come here. And he might have heard me and started coming up here. But, hey, Xander, come here. You get this one. Yeah, Dad? No, that was all you needed to know. Here. You come here. That's it. That's all you need to know for right now to come here. You'll get the rest of the information when you obey the first part. And again, why is that important? We're teaching them to blindly follow me. That doesn't sound very modern. It doesn't sound very good. Because again, I want them primed. In case there is a danger, in case there is a problem, they know to trust me. Also, I'm not going to be able to explain everything to them at this age. Right? At a certain age, right? I'll sit there, I'll teach Melody, we don't hit. I can't have a long, drawn-out conversation with her. But what does satisfy for now is because Daddy says it, that's what we do. And then as we have the ability to explain, as your brain grows, as your ability to comprehend grows, then we can have the why conversation. Right? All right, get in the car, we're going to church. But I want to play. No, get in the car, we're going to church. And we don't want to sit here and have long, drawn-out conversations. When I say go, we go. Now, again, as maturity takes place, then the conversations happen. I wouldn't sit there with definitely not somebody Heidi's age and try to, hey, listen, all right, you're going to do this and you're not going to ask any questions. You're going to get this done. Why? They're too advanced. They're too intelligent at the teenage age, right? We want to have a better conversation. Hey, listen, tomorrow, this is what's going to happen. This is why it's going to happen. And this is why that's important. Why? Because we address a more grown-up mind in a more grown-up way, but all the same, obedience is expected. Growing up in not necessarily a solidly Christian home, we still had the same rules that many of you had. Under my roof, you do things my way. And if ever you wanted to no longer do things my way, you could always get out from underneath my roof. All right, now there comes time for that conversation, right? When they're old enough and they're able to rebel at that point, all right, go. But at the same time, in this house, there are rules, and we all follow the rules, right? So we're taught to obey without question. Also, obedience must be instant and without arguments. I've caught that with more intelligent kids, and I'll see that, where you'll tell them to do something, and they'll have four or five thoughts they want to share with you before they do that. My children, I don't know about your experience, but my children all become philosophers at bedtime. They all want to talk about the where to and the wherefore and the how and the why and how they're feeling right when it's time to go to bed. And I think it's because they know that I want to answer questions for them. So they'll sit there and think they can get away with things. And again, that's nope, we're not arguing. You're not going to make a debate on it. This is what we're doing. And again, as consistent as the parent can be as possible with this. Also, for character building, parents should allow no exceptions to this rule. And I would say that statement takes two parts. No exceptions to the rule unless we're making an exception, right? One of my big things about yesterday was how much sugar Melody ate. And you've got to understand our house. We're not afraid of sugar, but I have the metabolism I have, and I'm afraid of passing that down, so I don't want to have bad habits. And Danielle is a healthy person. She came from a healthy house, so she's got squash, and she'll steam it and process it and freeze it and date it and time it, and she's very, very set and very, very decisive on what we put into the children's bodies. And then for her birthday, it's go ahead and grab handfuls of cake and frosting and just, and that everything in me screamed, no, 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 no. So for special occasions, like if we're going to plan to do certain things, right, Christmas Eve, we're probably going to stay up a little later. We're going to bypass those, the bedtime. But on a regular standard basis of having a schedule and having ideas and having rules, we need to abide by them as best as possible. So we keep the kids to the bedtime. We keep the kids to the schedule. We keep the kids to the rules. And the other part of that is mom and dad, don't be inconsistent yourself. If it's wrong for them to do it, it should also be wrong for you to do it to a certain extent. Don't share their bedtime. Don't feel like you got to stick with their diet. But you understand the consistency there. My dad, being a smoker, sat me down when I was 16 and said, son, I better not ever catch you smoking while he was smoking. You understand? And it did not exactly convey the lesson. I thought it did. Now, praise the Lord, I never started, but my brother did. And to this day, he still struggles with it. Now, where did he get his cigarettes? He got them from Dad. Where did he get his drinking habits? He got it from Dad. Why? Because while Dad would sit there and say, don't you ever start drinking, don't you ever start smoking, he would also have those things on his breath. So we understand we must be consistent. If I could sit there and bypass church, if I could sit there and bypass Bible reading, if my kids have no idea where I stand spiritually, it's going to be very hard for us to keep them in consistency, because again, most of what kids learn, be they small children, teenagers, grown people, lessons are better caught than they are taught. They'll see it and they'll learn more from what they see than they will ever hear you speak. Right? And children ought to be, we see the next point here, children should be taught to work. Within their first year, they can be taught to pick up clothes and toys. Now, we haven't quite figured that out for the first year. But we do have chores. We do have chores. Xander recently picked up doing all the trash duty. And that's a big blessing. But you know what? It's not because I don't want to take out the trash. It's to teach him responsibility. Can I ask this? Help me out here. Did you guys do allowances? Did anybody here, you do allowances with, you did allowances with, you did, okay, good, all right. I never got an allowance. My dad gave me that lecture. I allow you to eat my food. I allow you to stay in my house. I allow you to use my car. I allow you to, you know, that's what I was allowed to do. Now, we were never cut off. We were never, I felt like anything we needed, we always had. If I needed $2 or $3 here or there, Dad would say, hey, go do this for me and I'll give you the $2 or $3. We had those things, right? But there was never an aspect of you do this because I'm giving you money. And I believe many of you probably did the same. Even if you did allowances, you do what you're supposed to do anyway. And that's kind of the aspect we have there. Well, Dad, why do I have to take out the trash? Well, do you like smelling it, son? No. Do you like a house that's filled with garbage? No. All right, well, you take it out, and what's the reward? It doesn't smell like garbage. Oh, right? Why do we clean this? Why do we put that away? We learned this one just recently. Somebody stepped on a toy, and they fell, and they hurt themselves. And I said, well, why do we put the toys away after all the crying and the boo-hooing, and we establish that you will, in fact, live? Why do we put them away so I don't step on them and fall and crack my head? That's right. Why do we do the chores? And we teach them work. Why? Because I am terrified of the society we have right now, aren't you? Where we don't want to work. We don't want to go clock in. We don't want to do things. Why? Because it is far easier for me to sit back and find a more self-satisfying way to get some coin in the bank. So again, it'd be much more valuable for us to teach kids now to work so that we do continue to have a workforce in the future. They should also be taught regular habits for happiness and usefulness. This is a firm fact that children without a set schedule turn into very chaotic adults, where they don't have specific things and they don't have the right motive and the right place for everything. They grow up to be disasters of people, so to say. The kid that sat there and was able to do whatever they want, whenever they wanted. There was no bedtime. There was no, hey, right after school's when you do your homework. There was nothing set there. They don't grow up to be the organized type people that you see nowadays. It's very rare that you see them be able to make that exchange. We would get people in the office all the time, and they would come to me and say, hey, listen, this is the work that we've got to do. This is my recommendation for how you do it. You do this at around this time. You handle this business around then. And they would sit there and they'd say, well, I don't know how, what? And I would have to check in with them. And that would be my thing after 2 weeks. If I still have to check in with you and say you should have done this by now, that's a good indicator that I'm not going to be keeping you very long. Because if you can't master keeping your time, there's very little I can do for you because it only ever gets busier and busier. So I would work with them and they'd have a hard time. And many people would quit just having to keep a certain schedule. Not because there was a large workload. Our very introductory things, there was very little you had to do. But they did not like the structure of it, so they bombed out. Those are the people that can't handle large work orders, workloads. Those are the people who can't handle consistency or long-term job achievement. back again, long, long time ago, it would seem that you'd get into a job and you'd stay into that job for decades, right? That was the goal, put my 30 years in and go. I don't think we're going to have a lot of 30-year people coming up here. I'd be surprised if we have half as many people go into retirement having put 30 years into a job. Why? Because we bounce around. We hop around. We don't like the workload, and we struggle with it. So we should be able to teach them how to develop a pattern and regular habits. They should go to bed at regular times. They should have good habits of personal hygiene. When do we brush our teeth? When do we comb our hair? When do we take a shower? They should be trained to be orderly and neat as best as you can. It's chaos, I understand that. But parents have to set the example as well. If my room's a mess, I can't necessarily go up to their room and give them the same lecture, right? My bedroom's right there in the living room. If my bedroom's a mess, they know, right? Again, we set the pattern and the behavior. If you're sitting there at 11 o'clock in the morning and you're still in your pajamas and you're laying on the couch, you can't expect them to be go-getters in their own lives. Right? Children also need to be taught the art of living peaceably with others at home. No fighting should be tolerated. No shouting. No getting overly heated. We should be able to teach communication. Right? All right, Gideon, why are you screaming at Caspian? Well, he touched the balloon. And Caspian sat there and said, well, they're Melody's balloons, and I was moving them over here. And but that's not how it started. What did I come into the room with? Ah! Stop. Let's have a conversation. And we teach them that, how to talk, how to communicate. Now, instead of just, I'm upset, so I'm going to scream my head off, we have those conversations. Patience. We teach patience. We teach love to the best that we can. Again, the sin nature will always do what it will do. And we also teach this. We teach the fine art of forgiveness. Isn't that fun when you've got two kids hollering at each other to try to teach them forgiveness? Right. All right, now you say you're sorry to your brother. Sorry. And it's the most violent apology you've ever heard in your life. I'm sorry. And you know what? I firmly believe that the adult equivalent to that, right? The adult equivalent to I'm sorry is this. I'm sorry you feel that way. I used to get that at work all the time. Hey, listen, this happened and then that happened and that wasn't supposed to happen. You need to fix that. Well, I'm sorry you feel that way. I'm showing you numbers, not feelings. This messed up, right? But all the same, we want to teach them legitimate forgiveness, not just that, not just that on the surface level, I'm sorry, but actual forgiveness, where I'm going to approach you with a desire to not squash you into the floor. And hey, how about this? They should also be taught the right use of money. You know what it is, where it comes from. I told Xander he wanted to save up money. He got it into his head. He gets these wild ideas that he wants to find all the coins that he can to buy Melody a birthday present that's just from him, and he found it, and he was able to do that for her. So I said, all right, we'll clean this area and clean that area and clean this area. And as he's going through, he's finding change. And then finally on Friday morning, I said, well, why don't you go clean out the car? Whatever you find in my car, you can have. And he's going through, and we were cleaning out Danielle's grandparents' house right before her grandma died and right before he moved out of the house to a retirement facility. We were cleaning it up, and we found a large bag of change, and he said he didn't want it, and I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't feel comfortable spending it. And so it's been in the car for a while. It was $30 and change. I said, you clean that out. You can find whatever you find you can have. And he pulls out this great big bag. And he's looking at that. And I go through and we're talking about different things. We're talking about tithing and we're talking about saving and we're talking about proper use of it. And because it's there, do we need to use it? And how much of it is there? And I think as we're going through the store and he's looking at different things, he's making smart decisions and we're talking back and forth. And he goes, well, if I do this, I can have this much left over and I can do this and I can do that. And we want to have those conversations with the kids. Now, again, it feels like to me I'm just beginning on this journey. And a lot of these things are easier said than done because as much as you teach, they will reject. But at the same time, if you don't have the conversations, they don't stand a chance. if you don't have the initial teaching of this is how much you put into savings and this is how much you should be tithing, and at the end when you're tithing and you're deciding what to put into savings, there should also be some giving. Just because the money is in the bank account does not mean it needs to be spent, and all the different things that we teach them. And again, as we practice those things and we show them those things, they've got a better opportunity. All right, we'll finish with this one here. Children need and should have time with their parents. They should have special times with each parent and special times with the entire family together. At our house, we love board game night. For me, I love to grab a hold of one of them, throw them in the car, and whatever I'm doing, they're doing too. And you know what? I think they get a kick out of that. I drug Xander in. The boys got a Friday off of school, so I drug Xander with me to come to the Bible, our morning Bible thing, and then we went on over to pick out the present that he wanted to get for Melody, and that's something that we do. Hey, Caspian, why don't you jump in the car? We're going to go over here. We're going to handle this chore or this duty. Hey, Gideon, let's go over here, and we're going to go do this. You need individual time with the kids, as much as valuable as it is for us to spend group time with the kids. We love board game night. We'll bring out a board game and we'll play something. If ever we invite you over for Monopoly, understand we're not horrible people. We're just mean at Monopoly. And Xander is by far the worst. We have very strict rules for respect in our house. Like, I'm a person who, you speak to mom and dad a certain way, you speak to people in authority a certain way, but for Monopoly night, we throw that out the window. He will look square at his father in the eye and say, I'm going to beat you so bad you're going to cry. And it's what we do. But we have those moments, and we've got our little things, and every family has their little thing, right? For our board game night, we don't like to use the pieces that come with the board. We like to use little Lego characters. So we'll get those little Lego characters where we can find them, and we'll use them as pieces in the thing. We got little quirks, little things you do as a family, little traditions. It's important to establish those things. You never want to get it to where the kids leave the house and they don't have something they can fall back on and say, hey, remember when we used to? Because it's important that you feel tied to your family. It really is. Kids should be taught to have that. Right? So time is important. And above all, spell time time and work, that's what it takes. There should not just be time where we're sitting around watching television, sitting around wasting time, but it should be something of value. Some time where we're interacting instead of just being there. I knew somebody who said, well, I don't know what happens. Our family is so far apart, but we spend every Friday together. All right, well, what do you do on Fridays? Well, every Friday we go out to the restaurant. I go, all right, well, I'm going to stop you right there at the restaurant. Are you talking or are you on your devices? Well, we spend a lot of time on our devices. Okay, well, you're not talking, but you're on your devices. Is that time together or is that time at the same table? And I said, well, what do you do next? Well, we'll go over to the movie theater, and I've got strong theories on that. But are you talking? Well, no, you're not allowed to talk there. There's not a lot of time together. There's a difference between time spent together in a room and time spent together, and that's valuable. And you may be sitting there going, well, okay, well, my kids are gone. Time together is still a valid principle for families, between a husband and a wife, between friends. Time spent together is valuable, and not just for the sake of teaching or influence, but it helps build harmony in the house as well. Right? And it could be, you know, sometimes when you get to a certain point, you'll notice that the family's not necessarily getting along all that well. That typically happens when the kids reach that age from 13 to 40. Where the family has a hard time getting together and making sense of each other. Well, at that point, what do you need? We need time together. Well, nobody seems to like each other right now. Well, that's you know, we went through that patch of time in our family growing up. So what do we do? The clear answer would have been, well, we need to spend time together. And it would have been awkward at first, and it would have been frictious at first. But after a while, as we spent that time together, it would have dulled away some of that. Because what happens with a lot of families, especially with the kids, is they strike off of each other. Good morning, and we're gone. You're supposed to have done the laundry, and all of a sudden we're gone. There's not those times of both correction and love that are necessary. There's not that time where we're spending together and again, fusing together as a family unit. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, Lord, we are grateful for the teachings